Paul Tanko, we've been talking about many of the things that are coming up. You had a recent opioid forum in Albany because of the incredible problem we're having with drugs that included the federal drug czar. Could you tell us something about that?
Yeah, we thought it was very important because it's at such an epidemic situation. It's a crisis for every section of the country that we thought it was important to have a good community dialogue, to have a town hall type setting where you can hear from individuals who lead in policy development or provide services or understand the critical nature that many people face. And it was good. We had many perspectives shared in that gathering. We had many people speaking as to what they would like to see done. And I think we have to be real about this. First, we have to see addiction as an illness that it is. And until we see it as an illness, we won't conquer the epidemic. Number two, we have to address supply and demand. When this country consumes 80 to 83% of illicit drugs, and we're 4.7% of the world population, that is a frightening statistic. So we need to take action. And then we have to be real about our policy development and where it requires resources, we need to commit because this is a danger zone for all families. It knows nothing about income strata, it knows nothing about background, race, creed, what have you, location. Across the board, some of the wealthiest suburbs are facing heavy-duty epidemics with heroin. It's become very cheap. And quite honestly, because of pain management style and because of a culture that developed where you dispense of these pain-killing drugs, these opiates, that now have people hooked, and then they're finding their habit is fed by a cheaper solution called heroin.
So, Paul Tanko, how do we stop the man side?
I think number one, we need to look at the dispensing situation. Training, better training information for our medical community. I think it was a go-to, and I'm not condemning any behavior. It's just apparent that when we look at stats now, we were reaching to situations that impacted everyone, including the young. Think of it, young athletes, Alan, who would be hurt on the athletic field or in competition, would go have surgery or some sort of treatment and given these opiates. And before you know it, the children are hooked. Our young adults are hooked. You know, people have surgery. They have the back surgery or what have you, given opiates. You know, it was a situation that was feeding itself. And then we understood that we were just starting, igniting a problem that was epidemic in proportion.
It's hard for me to believe, and I've been studying this for a long time, but it's hard for me to believe that really what happened here was that, you know, I had back surgery. They gave me the pills. I brought them to the police station. I put them in the bin because I never used one. I was scared to do that. But that alone started the heroin surge. It's very difficult for me
I
to
know it
get
is. It's
that.
very difficult to imagine that that was the case, but what else would explain it? I
Well,
mean,
the malaise in the country. In other words, that if people haven't made any progress, they can't get a job. A kid gets out of college, can't get a job. A kid, you know, who graduates high school can't get a job. The rest of it, there's
well,
a
that,
sort of
if I might
thing.
jump in there, that's where
Of
inventorying
course.
the opiates that are given out. You know, if you give somebody a 30-day supply and they
That's
only
crazy.
needed five, where are those added tablets going? Where are they in the medicine cabinet? Are they, you know, are
Sure.
they within reach of minors? Is it flushed into our systems, our water systems? Any way you look at this, it's a dangerous situation. So there are efforts made here to quantify just what a cap of opiate prescription might look like. Should it be as many as 30? Man, that's far too many. You know, cut that down.
When you quiz the doctors from your congressional perch and say, "Isn't that too many?" What do they say?
Well, I think you're getting more and more acknowledgement that it was a situation that needed to come under control. A number of hospital settings and medical community settings are looking at pain management reform. And, you know, let's face it, we're a culture that doesn't grow old and doesn't have pain. And we pay a price for that. You know, it's a very cosmetic sort of situation and unrealistic. So we need to get into these situations. But, you know, again, committing to the resources is important. I did a bill. I have a bill that I sponsored with a fellow Republican who happens to be an MD. We put a bill together that talks about the cap that we have artificially placed on the doctor community. They can only take on 100 patients that they are going to treat with buprenorphine. That is the combat drug that balances, negates the effects of heroin. So the addict requires that. I have visited with addicts, and they have spent months, 7, 8, 9 months, searching for someone who's not at her or his cap as an MD. So we raised it from 100 to 250. I would have liked to seen the threshold higher, but for the sake of negotiating, I agreed to 250. We then further extended the medical community to include nurse practitioners and physician assistants, where with the appropriate certification training, they could administer the buprenorphine. I went and visited with addicts and presented to them in a very genuine way, there may be hope on the way, that we're going to have opportunities for you to visit a clinician, an MD, and they'll be able to treat you. Within days, 2 or 3 days, I'm in travel to D.C. In the midst of that travel, I get a call. We're taking out all the language on resources and supplanting that with the will of Congress. It's the sense of Congress that, and we do this litany of things of why we should be running a program like this, why we should raise the cap with no resources. So now I've offered false hope to the addict, to the addict community. To me, that's not genuine. It's so disingenuous to say, we understand there's a problem. We understand it's epidemic in nature. We understand that you're at the community, the medical community is at a cap. They can no longer treat additional patients. And our solution there, our acknowledgement is stark, but our solution is don't put any money behind it. And this is an illness, and it's hitting more and more families. I've talked to individuals who have buried their children, and they said they knew they were losing them. They couldn't look them in the eye, and they knew they just weren't winning that fight against that craving. And to not have the buprenorphine administered to those who need it as a solution, to say it's too expensive, so gut the resources. You know, I had to make a choice. Do I stay on the bill or I go off the bill? The only reason I stayed on it was so that I could have a spot, a seat at the negotiating table. And on the floor, I decried the fact that we gutted this. And I said, you know, the sense of Congress language.
Why did they gut it? Oh, we only have a minute, but why did they gut it?
Too expensive. Everything's too expensive. Can't do drinking water upgrades. Too expensive. Can't do infrastructure in general. Too expensive. Can't do enhancement programs for God forbid, you're poor or hungry or need training, job training. Everything's too expensive. In this case, it was too expensive. I said, what do you think's going to happen when you raise the cap and add more people that can assist? Of course it's going to have a price tag. So I stayed on the bills till we could negotiate, and I'm still there. But I decried it on the House floor and said, you know, the sense of Congress, if Congress had sense, they would fund this.
Well, shame on them, Paul Tonko. And thanks for being here, and thanks for explaining it all to us. We very much appreciate it. Always great to see you. Paul Tonko, Democrat of New York's 20th District.